you're into triathlon or multi-sport, you definitely want to stay here with us for this episode. We've got legendary Mikaylee Jones on the show today. Welcome to the Inside Sports Nutrition Podcast, your source for all things sports nutrition related. This show is hosted by myself, Dina Griffin, and my co-host, Bob Sibahar. We are both registered dietitians, board-certified specialists in sports dietetics with combined professional experience exceeding 40 years. Our mission here is to translate nutrition and sports science research to real life, give you some awesome interviews with a variety of experts and athletes along the way so you can enhance your knowledge to optimize your health, fitness, and athletic performance. On today's show, Mikaylee Jones, legend in triathlon, is joining us today for a fun conversation. If you're not familiar with Mikaylee, well, her athletic resume is quite long, but a few highlights: winning the silver medal in triathlon in the 2000 Sydney Olympics. She's an Ironman world champion, ITU world champion two times, I should add, and has a long list of accomplishments and wins in several triathlons over the past, let's call it, 30 years. So she has quite the array of experiences, and as a coach, we'll also be sharing some of her insights in triathlon and related to nutrition as well. So it's a really fun conversation, and we're so glad you're here for it. Thank you so much. And real quick, before we get to the show, don't forget to make sure you're subscribed or following the podcast. And it'd be so awesome if you could share a favorite episode or even this episode on your social channel. You could put it on your Instagram story, Facebook story, or a post and tag ISN Podcast. That is so appreciated, just to help share exposure to the pod and hopefully get a few more listeners along the way. Share all the fun. So thank you so much for being here. And now enjoy episode 128 with Mikaylee Jones. Okay, Bob, I mean, what do you get when you combine a few of these factors here? An Olympic silver medalist, two-time ITU world champion, Xterra world champion, ITU Hall of Fame, Ironman world champion. I mean, should I go on?
Well, I think you could, but I think I see where you're going. I don't know, Dina, what do we get?
We get legendary world-class status Mikaylee Jones on the podcast today with us today.
Yep. Here I am. I'm so excited.
Mikaylee, thank you so much for joining us. We are so honored to have some time with you and chat with you today.
I'm super excited. It's always an awesome opportunity to chat about all things triathlon.
Awesome. Well, let's get into it. Maybe for those who may not know your background quite as well, could you give us an overview of how you got into triathlon and just some of that background from the athletic perspective?
Yeah, so I was lucky enough that my high school run coach recommended triathlon back when I was in high school. And thanks to him, the journey has been awesome. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you never know where someone's suggestion will lead to. And he always used to have this quote when we used to run track and run intervals. It's like, will you remember me when you're famous? And I used to giggle and laugh. And, and you know, it's like it's those people that really that believe in you before you believe in yourself, I think is so important. That you know, in the moment, you don't really understand that, you know, they have bigger picture. They have sort of like a bigger picture than you probably do. But, you know, it's important that you do have good support behind you. So, you know, just starting out at eight, I think I was like 17, 18. I did my first triathlon in 1988 and just absolutely fell in love with it. And then it sort of put me through university because, you know, I'd win a couple of $100 here, a couple of $100 there. And then, you know, I always wanted to come and race in the US. It was sort of the mecca of triathlon, and the best people in the world came from the US. And, you know, I always, for some reason, wanted to come to the US. So triathlon was my path to getting here. And just so blessed. Like my first world championship was in 1990 in Orlando, Florida, and I think I was 13th. And then the next year I was third, and the next year I won, and the next year I won. And all these stepping stones early, back then it was like, I felt like I was working hard. But when I look back at now, like, wow, like a couple of years into triathlon, I was world champion.
I was just going to say, Michaela, your first try was 1988, and then you went to world championships 2 years later. That's amazing. I mean, obviously you're an amazing athlete, but that's impressive.
Yeah, and I think I was fortunate. Like, I did get selected for the Worlds in 1989, but being a university student, I couldn't afford it. But then by 1990, the Australian Triathlon Federation had actually found good enough sponsors to send an entire team. So without that support, financially, I couldn't have been able to go to my first World Championship. And then the second one I went to just happened to be in Australia, so that was awesome. And then I won, of course, in Muskoka and Manchester, England, and Muskoka, Canada. So, when you think about it, it's like I always had the philosophy that things happen for a reason. And it's like Triathlon Australia got a big sponsor so I could go to the Worlds. And then Worlds were in Australia where I got to get third. And then all of a sudden, I was setting myself up for the rest of my life, basically.
How did that work with, because I know part of your race background and resume was some Xterra championships and of course the ITU and then of course Ironman distance. How did that progression or evolution happen from Xterra through full Ironman distance?
Well, it's like I actually used to do a little bit of mountain bike racing. So the Australian Cycling Federation were keen to try to get me to go to the Atlanta Olympics for mountain biking. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that. I don't think I have the technical skill. And then I fell into Xterra because I was having a good season, but I was carrying a lot of fatigue. So I had to take a nice big break in the middle of the season. And then I'm like, oh, maybe I'll do something completely different. I'll do Xterra. And I wasn't in the best shape, but I also knew that how skillful mountain bikers were. And I knew I'd done a little bit of mountain biking. I'm like, oh, this could be fun. And I literally, it came down to probably, I think, the last 200 meters. And I passed Shari Kane, who was a very well-known mountain biker at the time. And it's like, even though I only just caught her, it doesn't matter. I still caught her and I was first across the line. So, it's one of those things like destiny sort of pushed me into that. And the problem is, technically, I used to crash a little bit more than I'd like. So then I'd have to stop. Then I'd have to stop running for a couple of weeks. So, and I love running so much. So I didn't spend a lot of time. Like, that's pretty, it was sort of that one and done thing. And then, of course, winning world championship titles as a short course athlete, and then all of a sudden triathlon gets into the Sydney Olympics, and I'm like calculating how old I'm going to be. Okay, at this age I'm going to be like over 30, but I'm like, oh, I'm still good, I still feel like I can do that. So it was basically a 4 year process to get to the Olympics. And then Australia was so competitive. I believe the year before the Olympics, we finished first, second, third, fourth, and fifth at the World Championship. So just to make the Australian team was going to be significant. And then to get the opportunity to race in your home country where the Olympics are, the biggest sporting event in the world, and to see all my friends and family like right there with me, like unbelievable to be able to have triathlon in the Olympics for the first time in my home country with all my friends and family, my coaches that I coached me over the years, my training partners, so special, so special. And it was one of the most emotional and amazing experiences. It was emotional because even before we even started racing, people were cheering for you. Countries get very, very patriotic, especially for sporting events. And it was like, I was just blown away that the crowd was going nuts just as we were warming up.
Oh,
So,
Makili, when did you know at the 2000 games, when did you know that you were going to be on the podium? Like, and then what kind of reaction did you have internally?
I sort of had this experience at races that if I had done well once, I would definitely do well again and again and again. And when you go through some of my results, I've won the Escape from Alcatraz like 8 times, and I've won the Chicago Triathlon like 7 or 8 times, and I've won the St. Anthony's Triathlon, which were big races back in the day, 8 or 9 times. So, having won on this Sydney course at our test event, it gave me a lot of confidence that if I could execute what I could on the day, I had every opportunity to take away that gold medal. And it's like you look back and people will say, "Oh, but you only got the silver medal." I go, "No, I won the silver medal." It's like, it's not that I lost anything. It's like I won the silver medal. That was my destiny.
Exactly.
That was my destiny. And when I crossed the line, yeah, it came down to like very close, the closing few 100 meters. But like in reality, that was my destiny. And I was so happy to win that medal, Australia's first medal, triathlon's first silver medal, like so many firsts. And to have that
Yes.
opportunity, yeah, my life maybe would have been a little bit different, but I'm happy with the way my life turned out, winning a silver medal. And it's funny because shortly after that, the Sydney Olympics, like during the Olympics, we had like a debrief, and I think that was probably the biggest downtime of the whole Olympics. Was the disappointment was that we had this swim coach, Laurie Lawrence, come and do like a talk with us. And Australia was expected to do much better, but it's like triathlon's very dynamic. It's not like just swimming down a pool lane and you do lap after lap, but it's so dynamic. It depends who you get to work with on the swim. It depends who you get to work on the bike. It depends like how fresh your legs are. And he looked at me and he said, "Makili, even you're disappointed you didn't win the gold medal." I'm like, "Excuse me?" Like, now I probably would have cussed him out big time. I think at that moment in time, I was just horrified that somebody would have, I think, not the common sense to know anything about triathlon, and that, it's so fragile at best. That, you're racing at the Olympics. It happens every 4 years. You've got to be spot on every 4 years, only once. Like, how can you even time that? And I felt that, I did everything I could on the day. Do you look back and go, "Oh, I should have done this and this?" Yeah, that's how you get better. But like, I honestly, to this day, can still say that I cherish that silver medal so
I love
much,
it.
and so proud to say that I'm an Olympic silver medalist.
You should be.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, there's so many firsts there. Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
well, and we loved watching you too during those games too. I just remember. But so let's shift focus into nutrition now, because we want to learn what your nutrition journey has been as a young female runner, turned triathlete, turned professional, turned champion of everything. Like, where
Yeah.
did you start nutritionally, and how did you make changes throughout your career and your life as a young female, kind of just exploring the sport?
Oh my goodness, so many mistakes. But
Do tell.
it's like I've sort of had this attitude that everything in moderation. I've always like too much of one thing is bad, too much of the other thing is bad. And I think I've had enough influence over the years, especially younger. There was things that I'm like, you're just making good choices. And I think I learned early about maybe not the best choices, but I say good choices, because you can always go from like there's good, there's very good, and then there's like, you can really tip it over. And I always felt that I never tipped it over one way or the other. Like, I used to see a lot of athletes in the off season, they'd put on so many pounds because they'd be eating all this junk food and stuff. And I love sugar. I'm a sugar fiend. That is probably my biggest downfall, but it's like I try to do it in moderation. And I think, back in the day, it was like, it's just like training. There wasn't all the nutrition information, and it's very different. It was like carbo loading. And I'm like, I didn't always like to carbo load. I sort of like a, am an meat eating Australian, so I we have a good protein background. So I think that really helped me as well. And I mean, there were stages, you know, Olympic distance races, that's where nutrition starts to come into play. And I sort of learned like a few things early that I've got to keep myself cool by keeping my core temperature down as quickly and as much as I can. So I learned that early about myself that, you know, hydration, but you know, I used to do races where literally my bones would ache afterwards because, you know, just incorrect nutrition. And then like you start to learn from it, right? You're like, how can I make this better? And then it's like, okay. And then it was a little more like, well, what's my pre-race routine? Because I didn't like doing a lot of carbohydrates before. It's like I've won a lot of races on having a hamburger before a race.
Oh, interesting.
You know, because it's like, as long everything in moderation, right? It's not like a huge big steak or anything, but it's like it's just a small, like nothing huge. You know, you get your carbohydrates, and I mean, it may not be the best, but it's like it's something that you could do anywhere in the world, and that's what you got to think about when you're an international competitor. What can you keep consistent? And then I learned very early about like good quality of water. You know, you don't drink tap water when you're traveling. You don't brush your teeth in tap water. You don't eat salad. You know, it's like all these things I learned early because we were racing internationally all the time. So that came into play. And then the nutrition component then goes, oh, okay, then I really need to do this before the swim. I need to do this on the bike, and I need to do this on the run. Like I started, it was very early that I'm like, oh, you know, then gels came into play, so that helped. And then I was a big drink protein shake before I race, short course. You know, it was like that was my pre-race, was like a protein shake, super easy. I could be super consistent with it. And then I learned early, like have a protein shake after the race. So I was, I think, one of the earliest adapters of making sure that I had a protein shake in my race gear. So as soon as I finished the race, I could do that. And then it was funny because a lot of the, there was a couple of the male athletes, I won't name who it was, but after every like International World Cup, he'd literally go and get whatever nutrition I have had left in my water bottles, because he always knew that I would have some type of hydration in, like I and then water to keep me cool. So I'd get back to my bike and all my nutrition, my leftover nutrition would be gone.
Oh
Oh my
my gosh,
gosh.
that's too funny. That's too funny.
Mooching. Yeah.
Did you, as part of like the coaching team that you had with you, did you ever have a sport dietitian help guide you, or were you just figuring this all out on your own?
No, just figuring it out on my own. Like before hot races, I knew I had to salt my food a little bit. And you know, you'd crave like a little bit more salt. So I learned early. And then, you know, creatine popped up into the scene, like I think in probably the mid-90s to 2000, like somewhere around there, like creatine like became popular. I learned very, very quickly, if you do creatine in hot weather, not so good. And you know, a lot of people don't even know that to this day. Like, yeah. So it was funny. There was this one athlete that I used to race against, and she passed out a few times. I'm going, you're taking cre and I go, you're taking creatine, aren't you? And she's like, how do you know? And I'm like,
Because you went through the ringer, maybe not passing out, but you knew from experience, right?
yeah, like I knew there was something that wasn't quite right. And it's funny because back in the day in Australia, have you guys ever heard of desiccated liver? Yeah, so back in the day, right, they did the lab rats and they put him in like water, and the ones that survived the longest were the ones that, like, yeah, it's funny because like desiccated liver was like a big thing for a long time in Australia. I mean, we were basically guinea pigs. Like we you figured stuff out because there wasn't the knowledge. Like if I knew what I knew now, like oh my goodness. But no, I never had a sports dietitian ever.
Did you change
But
things when you went to long course like Ironman? Like, were you still in the tinkering phase, or were you pretty set with what your body needed nutritionally to make that jump to Ironman distance? No.
no, definitely not. Because you know, racing 2 hours to racing 9 hours is very, very different. the glycogen stores that you need. Sodium's not just for cramping. I learned that very early. I learned that, what happens if you take too much in, then you get the distended stomach. So I did learn a few lessons early. And, back then, nutrition was like so different what it is now. I mean, it was like you would stick power bars on the top tube.
Oh yeah, I
And then
remember. I
they're
did
like
that
putting
too.
bricks. They're like putting bricks in your stomach. They're like little bricks,
And depending on
So
the environmental temperature, they either melted really nicely to that top tube so you couldn't get them off, or they popped off
yeah.
if it was too cold.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? It's like nutrition is so environmental too. A hot race is so different from a cold race. I mean, one thing that I did learn early, as I said, I learned how to regulate my temperature, like in terms of like, so I actually did well in cold races and I actually did well in hot races because I definitely, for some reason, I like, definitely in the hot, I knew that I had to like I don't sweat as much as I probably should. So then I got to make sure my skin is moist as much as I can. So I'm taking full advantage of every aid station. I'm going to put ice everywhere. Like I have the hydration diamond. So head, armpits, crutch.
And you're still
Yeah.
racing competitively these days, triathlon. Are you
Yeah.
focused more on 70.3, or what are your current endeavors?
I'm a bit of a speed demon. The shorter the better, as much as like Ironman's like, you got to be a big endurance diesel engine. And like winning the Ironman World Championship, like I was lucky because I had Paula Newby-Fraser, who coached me, and she was really good at like, what worked for me may not work for you. And that straight away, it's like so individualized, right? And it's so true. And I had to figure some stuff out. So I always used to say, thank heaven for 7-Eleven. What am I craving when I walk into that store?
I love it.
And you're probably going to hate me, but one of my treats when I raced Ironman was gummy bears.
Oh yeah,
Sour
we don't judge
gummy
here.
bears. Sour gummy bears. So that
Oh,
was like,
sour ones, even better.
yeah, I've saved many people, right? Because yeah, they're calorie dense, right? And
Definitely.
that sourness is like, so they're sweet, but that sourness like just takes the edge off.
Oh,
So
yeah.
and back in the day, Red Bull started to come into play too. And like I learned early that you don't have to drink it. You can just swish it in around in your mouth. I don't know how. And it's like Coke, right? Like Coke is not just for like getting you pepped up. If you race in dirty water, drink some Coke afterwards. Yeah, I don't know, for some reason, like these, like they might be like old wives' table and they wives' table fables, but they may not work. But it's like, as long as you believe they work,
Yeah, the power of
like,
that.
yeah, like when we did the Rio Olympics, obviously we were swimming in not the greatest quality of water, and a lot of the athletes at the Paralympics, because I was guiding Katie Kelly. So I swam, bike, and ran with her, and a lot of the athletes didn't want to swim. I mean, normally I wouldn't swim in, if I didn't have to, but it was important because the course was a little bit challenging. And I'm like, as long as we have Coke after, we're good.
Clean everything out, or reset system a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, for your current training and racing, are
Yep.
you?
Sorry, I totally missed that question.
Oh no, that's
I got
okay.
distracted.
Well, because you
Yeah.
mentioned shorter, faster, and are you
Yeah.
doing running exclusive, or still a mix of triathlon and other
No,
things?
I love triathlon. I'm a triathlon geek. I'm proud to say I'm a triathlon geek. I am now qualified for the 70.3 Worlds as an age grouper, new age group, 55 to 59. That'll be in New Zealand at the end of the year. But I hadn't, I mean, I raced with one of my good friends, Marissa Rassetta, in December in Palm Springs at Indian Wells. I was doing some training with her, and I'm like, oh, I'm feeling so good. Maybe I should race it. And I ended up like having a great race. I think I was like third amateur overall,
Oh my
which is
gosh.
pretty good. It's pretty, I was pretty happy and I felt good. But my passion is shorter. I like sprint distance, Olympic distance. Sometimes I should do more of it because I really think I'd do well at I'm quite talented at that distance, even though I love short sprint. I'm probably more talented maybe at Olympic distance for some reason. But yeah, like I still love racing, and you know what I've learned as I become a more mature athlete, it's like strength is important, high protein is important, recovery like totally important. So yeah, so as I've getting, as I said, a little bit more mature, like the pattern has changed it. Like definitely I feel like a little bit higher protein for me works really well. But not to say I don't do carbs. I still do carbs, but I definitely think I have to maintain a certain level of protein in my diet
For
to
sure.
do to
McKillie, do you use any sport nutrition products then during training or racing, since they are kind of shorter distances, or what are you up to with that?
Yeah, so I use a local company's products, and I mean, like for a sprint distance, I'll still do a gel 30 minutes before. I'll do electrolytes on the bike as well as a gel halfway, and I might carry a gel just because my thing is I never want to be depleted. I want to make sure I can finish that race like I could keep going. And then Olympic distance race, you know, it's like the same sort of thing. Like I'll just add maybe two bottles on the bike just so that I can like just get a little bit more fuel. And then in terms of caffeine, like I will do a little bit of caffeine, but I don't drink coffee. So I feel like I get a big hit if I do, like maybe I don't need that much. Sodium, I'll always put extra sodium because I do, even though I don't show that I sweat, but my sweat composition shows that I do need a little bit more sodium concentration. And then like the recovery aspects, you know, protein straight after, protein before I go to bed, just little things like that. Just trying to like facilitate that recovery. I try to eat, you know, have my protein shake, and then I don't just eat my protein shake. I'll have a meal within that 20-minute window. As soon as I finish, it's protein, and then within like a 30 to 60 minute, I'll eat again, like some type of meal.
I love this. You
I
have this dialed
know.
in, which is awesome, right?
Well,
So,
yeah, because if I forget, then I'm tired, the more tired.
it's part of the
Yeah.
recovery. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what we need, as you called us, mature athletes. We do appreciate that term, by the way. So let's have you put your coaching hat on, because you coach triathletes. So from a nutrition perspective, as a coach, what are some triathletes that you're, what are they missing nutritionally? What are they not knowing? What are they doing that you're like, oh, we need to change that? Like, what are you seeing out there as a coach? Kind of some nutrition mistakes.
Well, for one, I always say I'm all about a team. So it's like my nutrition expertise is here. And if I need to go outside that, never afraid to send an athlete to somebody who specializes in that. And I think that's number one as a coach. Like I know what my lane is, and I think it's important that you make sure you have a good team that you can push athletes who need a little bit more. But you know, I see the same things that you know that you guys obviously would see. It's like injuries. You know, it's like people forget that like a lot of injuries can come from inappropriate or not enough calories. That's like a big thing that I see all the time. Two, I think people don't take advantage enough of what's available in terms of determining, you know, how they can improve. Like getting a sweat test done, and don't just get a normal sweat test. Make sure it's analyzing exactly what you're sweating out. I think that's super, super important. I think number three, I think sometimes people take on too much nutrition and they don't train their body. Like my belief is, and you guys can correct me, it like takes about 7 days to train your stomach. And I think people underestimate that. Like now I can eat anything and go for a run, right? Because I've trained my system to be able to do that. And I think that's the other thing. Like people will say, oh, I can definitely not eat before a session. I'm like, yes, you can. You've just got to train your system and figure out what works best for you. I mean, I'm not a big believer, and a lot of athletes I see, like, and you know, I know it's individual, but for me, fasting as an endurance athlete, I don't think that's good. I really think that we don't want to burn like do certain things because we have to maintain like a huge load because we are training for two sorts. So if we deplete ourselves by fasting, at some point that's going to increase the risk of injury, your performance is going to decline. So not a big fan of it, and I may be wrong, but definitely that's the one thing that's the other common thing that I get asked about fasting.
I was going to
Oh.
say, like, do you have some of your athletes pushing you back on that, or how do they listen to
Yeah.
you? Because sometimes they don't even listen to us sometimes when we
Yeah.
have
No,
those chats,
yeah.
right?
But you know, I tell people all the time, like, what would I know? What would I know? But you know, it's one of those things that, you know, sometimes you've got to let an athlete experience yourself. And then, you know, of course, the number thing is like, oh, just tell me what to do. Unfortunately, I can only give you guidelines, and then we can work from there. Yeah, and I think the other thing people just don't do is like recovery. Like after a race, I'm like, where's your recovery shake? Like it's so easy. It's like that in itself, like I've seen that for a long time. Like, where is your protein shake for after the race? You know, it's like
Definitely.
it's creating good habits. So I think there are a couple of things that I do see is like poor nutrition leads to injury, obviously leads to lower performance. The pushback sometimes I get on fasting and, you know, people saying, oh, I definitely can't. No, you've got to train your stomach to be able to handle. And, you know, we know so much more about how many carbs per hour that we should be taking. And we know so much more. Like, and that's the other thing. I think as we get older, and especially women going through menopause, it's like, well, how can I've got to change something because I'm not who I used to be. So my theory, here's my theory. Here's my theory on menopause. So anywhere from, I mean, the age that on, you could get like early onset, but basically I feel from 45 to 55, if I was going to put it into a small net, you get a performance decline. So basically, that's like whenever you're going through menopause, you get that performance decline. And then I feel once you get through it and you've changed your eating habits to have, you know, whatever you need to do. For me, it was like I needed to do more protein and I put more strength in my thing. So that was my individual journey. And then I feel once you sort of get your body re-regulated to the new you, because that's what you are. You're definitely, as a female athlete after menopause, you're so different from pre-menopause to menopause to post. So then the performance incline, you get a performance increase. So that's my theory. So I might get proven wrong, but so far that's what I have found just working with my athletes.
I think you're right, Makili. I mean, it is such a volatile time with hormone flux and things in that age you mentioned, 45 to 55. And I feel like so many women athletes either give up or they go too deep into their training and that mantra, like, I just must need to train harder because I must not be doing enough or I need to eat less. So I appreciate highly what you're saying. And
And our body changes, you know, our body,
totally.
the way our body it does, it changes.
It
So, and
is.
everyone's, some people have more of extreme, some people have no extreme, you know, it's like, so yeah, but that's what I have found just working with my athletes. And then, you know, it is that mental attitude too. It's like, look, I know it's hard. I know you're going to get the night sweats. It's like, but don't, the worst thing you can do is try to like completely deprive yourself and cut your calories way back. Maybe you could do that when you're a kid, like in your teens, in your 20s, you know, everyone, like, not that I recommend that anyway, because I've never believed in that, but it's like they think like less is going to make me back to who I was instead of embracing who they are and then work with that.
Makili, I was just thinking along these lines, do you take any supplements right now currently in your either to support recovery or other just general daily, kind of dietary supplementation?
Yeah, so I have to take some calcium just because I'm osteopeno. So I definitely do calcium. I'm a big believer in fish oil. So I do fish oil. And then amino acids, and that's really all the supplements that I would really take. That's it.
Yeah, that's simple
Okay,
for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makili,
And
I do wanna just throw a little bone to the guys out there,
perfect.
because just you know, just because, and because obviously you do coach some male athletes too, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so
Lo
here's what I'm
lots
gonna
of male
ask.
athletes.
Okay, so let me just shift, because you know our brains are a little bit different, and
Yes.
I'm not gonna share my experience both as a male but also as a sport dietitian working with males. But what has been like, if you could just sum up your experience, you know, coaching and working with male triathletes versus female triathletes, and it could be anything related, or if you want to swing in nutrition, like what are some of the differences you've seen?
Well, definitely, I think like males, muscular wise, they're stronger. So sometimes they can handle a much bigger load than a female athlete. So I think that's the big thing. It's like you've got to be very like, although females are very good at the endurance, it's that muscular skeletal load that they just don't have that muscular strength that a male athlete has. So, that can lead for the females lead to more injuries. Not to say that the guys don't get injured, but again, protein
Yes.
is still like it's across the board. That's going to like help a male athlete, especially as they're getting more mature and they get lower testosterone. So, I mean, that's the most difficult thing that the male athlete all of a sudden, their testosterone, but then the muscle mass. So again, it's sort of similar. You got to make sure you do your strength, you got to make sure you do your protein. But yeah, I think that the load, you have to be careful with the load, like a female athlete load and a male load. And obviously, depending how much you weigh, but I think overall, the difference is typically male athletes, they have a stronger muscular system than females,
Yeah, but I love,
along with a lot of other things. But like, I think that's in terms of training and load, that's where like if you're as a coach, you can run into difficulties to make sure that every athlete, yeah, is different. If I was going to generalize, that would be the one factor that you
Yeah, I
have to
love it.
really be careful of.
Yeah, and I love your message of protein, because you know obviously Dina and I are so pro protein, but it doesn't really matter the gender, and that's what I kind of was hoping that you would get to also. But I just wanted to
Yeah.
see what your experience was with male triathletes too, because it is, you know, guys out there, you know, we're dealing with hormone changes also in later in life, and you know, more mature years. So we do have to kind of remember that, you know, nutrition needs to shift for everybody.
And it's funny because it's like I was talking to somebody on the weekend and they're like a male athlete in their 70s and they did like a 100 mile ride on Saturday and then did a half marathon on Sunday and I'm like, but your Ironman isn't till October, the end of October is Kona. And I'm like, do you have another Ironman coming up? And he's like, no, then why are you doing all this mileage right now? You're putting so much stress, and you're not just putting stress on your muscular system, but your cortisol system. It's
You're not
like there's
kind of
only,
supporting what your body needs.
yeah. And it's like, there's the body will turn around and like throw you under the bus. If
Well,
you
I
put
think,
your hand in the fire too much, it's like it's going to throw you under the bus.
Well, I
Yeah.
see that so much just off on a tangent with long course athletes, right? And
Yeah.
you know, kind of jumping into it and doing a lot of volume, like a lot of volume early on, not
Yeah.
just the low, moderate volume and kind of building up periodization wise, but
Well,
you know,
it's
for
week
some
after
reason,
week after week after week.
And it's not
Yeah.
respecting the build and recovery ratios, and it's really not respecting their body, because here's the other thing, and I'm going to get on my soapbox, they're also not changing their nutrition to support that load. And that's what you were saying. We're very susceptible to injury risk when we're not eating appropriately for not only the training load and recovery needs, but also just for our health, longevity, you know, all of the things that come apart being, you know, human beings, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I hear you, boy. This is amazing. Is there, so we've kind of tagged you on a lot of different things here. We've gone all over the place. I feel like
Sorry.
there might be some things that we've missed though. Like, are there things that you're like, oh yeah, wait, I forgot about this, or this is really important to mention? Like anything that we've missed in this wonderful discussion so far?
I think we've covered some really, really good basics. And I think that's important because it does come back to the basics.
It does. It
You know,
does.
it does. Like I'm a horse rider. I do dressage,
Oh,
and it's
yeah.
like to progress, you got to keep going back to the basics, and
Yes,
then you
yes.
progress, and then you got to make sure the basics are correct, and then you move on. Oh, what do I need to fix to keep moving on? And you know, it's also like I tell athletes, I think the one thing that athletes have to understand, and the way I coach, it's like if you come to me and this is your first ever, say you're doing an Ironman, your load to this Ironman to like year five of your Ironman should be different.
Yes.
Like there needs to be some progression, because otherwise, where do you go? And the thing is, it's like you don't want to overload the athlete too much because increase the risk of injury, burnout, et cetera, et cetera. But so if you, okay, this is where we need to start and this is the plan, be patient, right? Yeah, I could throw you and make you do these big, huge sessions, but and you might get success at it, but like let's make sure that where our percentage of success is here, then maybe like down here because the load was what you've been able to do. Just like
Yeah.
in dressage, in horse riding, it's like you need years and years of muscular development to be able to get to the top. And if you miss any of those steps, then you won't get the very best out of yourself.
Yeah, it's so true. You
Perfect.
know, Makili, I had a little bit of a chuckle inside when you said patience and putting triathletes in the same sentence. Let's just think about
I
that. Because,
was doing a swim clinic this
yeah.
week, last week, and I'm like, hey, this is the yoga session. This is chill. This
Yeah,
is
yeah.
you're just gonna be working on some drills, you know, chill out. It's not a race. You can relax. There's a time to like push, there's a time to go easy. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I totally get it because it's like, okay, let's go, let's go, let's go.
Yeah.
But that's why zone two training is so good for you.
Right,
You know,
yeah.
it's that building block that gets you to be able to do exactly. And it's like if you are going too hard in those zone two aerobic workouts, then your performance isn't going to be where it needs to be. And it's so hard to tell. I mean, that was the biggest thing that Paula Newby-Fraser said to me when I was going from short course to long course. Slow down.
Yes,
Slow
yes.
down. Slow down. And it's hard for us because what do we get told? Hard work equals reward. So
Yes.
I always say everyone trains hard. Everyone trains. I love it when people say, oh, that athlete deserved to win because they trained so hard. Everyone trains hard.
Yes,
So
exactly. You need to
it's
train
this,
smart.
yeah, and it's the small details that set you apart.
Exactly.
Like if we
Makili,
had to, yeah.
I had the wonderful pleasure and opportunity to work with Susan Williams, who is our first US
Yeah.
medalist in triathlon in 2004.
She was
She got the
amazing.
bronze. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And she still is. But you know, one of her I will always remember this to the day that I'm not here anymore, but I remember her saying early on when we worked together, she said, "You know, Bob, you have to go slow to become fast." And it just resonated with me so much. And that's something that I use with the athletes that I coach. And oftentimes I find that I have to tell my athletes, you know, today's a zone one, zone two mental training day, even, you know, with the zone two physical training day. Because don't you see, like, a lot of athletes are like, oh, zone two, well, I can maybe push it a little bit
Yeah.
higher, right?
Well, you know, and I think that's the difference between like a really successful professional athlete and an amateur athlete. They're slow and they're fast is like it's not much in between. But a professional, like, you know, even the Kenyans, right? They're slow is slow, they're fast is fast. And I mean,
Yes.
that's what I feel like some of the biggest differences are. It's like I don't want your slow and your fast to be so close together. There needs to be a significant difference between those two.
Yeah, it's not like a one zone
Definitely.
difference. We're talking like it's got to be multiple zones so we can have
Yeah.
those physiological separations and mental psychological separations too.
Yeah. So what I
Yeah.
always say to my athletes, I go, you know, when you're out there and you're feeling really good and you're like, oh, you know, I could just push it a little bit to today. And I'm like, don't. Just tell yourself, don't do it. When you feel like you can go faster, don't go there. Save that for the
That's
race.
right. That's right. Exactly. Oh, Makili, this is awesome. We want to transition into our high five questions because we want our listeners to get to know, and I feel like they're going to get to know you a lot from listening to this episode, but we have just some kind of off the cuff personal questions. You don't know what these are yet, and we just whatever answers, come to your mind, we just want you to kind of blurt them out if you're not or if you're willing to kind of entice us into asking these questions. Are you good?
I'm good to go.
Okay, first one is super easy. Do you have a nighttime kind of routine? Like a
Yes,
wind down routine. Yeah.
I do. If I don't do it, I will not sleep well. So I will do a little bit of stretching, a little bit of activation, a little bit of foam roller, maybe a little bit of the gun. I have to do, besides taking my dogs for a walk, I do go through a routine at night, and I feel it makes me sleep way better.
Awesome.
Love
So
it.
important. Oh, Makili, what about, okay, question number two. What is your current favorite running shoe? And that maybe is either racing shoe or
Oh,
just
that's
like,
easy.
oh, good.
Easy. I love the Hoka Rocket X too.
Oh,
The Rocket
okay.
X too. I don't know. I think the foam and the carbon, it's not too hard, and it's got like that nice rocker. And I
Yes.
just put it on, and I feel like I can. I feel like I'm cheating because the develop like to be in that good running posture would take
Yeah.
me a lot longer than like it does. So I can run faster than I should be
Nice.
able
Love it.
to.
Love it. Well, you have obviously been around the world and then some with all of your racing endeavors and distances. Does one race stand out? Like, do you have like a favorite race that you've done? That's a hard question, I know.
I know, can't I say like several? Because like I've been to the Olympics. I've done
I
Ironman.
know.
I mean, I've won Ironman. I love Alcatraz because I've won that so many times. It's like all of them.
Oh, okay. Good answer. Good
And
answer.
that
I knew that would
works.
be kind
Yeah.
of an impossible one.
That's a hard one. Yeah. Makili, what's a favorite hobby that you have that doesn't involve sport? No horseback riding, no triathlon, no sport.
No dog walking.
Oh,
I
shoot.
mean, that could
Is
be
that
a
a
sport, I
sport?
guess, but.
I actually do enjoy reading a good autobiography. I think that's part of the reason why I love triathlon, because it's meeting people and they share a bit of your story. So for some reason, I've always been attracted to autobiographies.
That's very
Cool.
interesting. All
Yeah.
right. Well, this last question may or may not be as easy or difficult to answer as my number three that I asked you, but if you were limited to only giving athletes one piece of advice, only one, what would
Oh,
that
that's
one
easy.
piece of advice? Okay, what is it?
Have fun.
Oh, look at that. Said
Sorry.
from,
Have fun. Have
love.
fun. If you don't, the thing is, if you're not having fun, you won't last. Find
I love.
the enjoyment, find the fun part of why you do it.
Amazing
Such great
words.
it's not always fun, but at some point you can go, that was fun. Or
Yeah.
if you don't, you got to find that fun, because why else do we do it?
Beautiful. Find the fun, have the fun. Wise words. Oh my gosh, Makili, there's so many golden nuggets here. Your athletes are so lucky to have you on their team to guide them and make them stronger, fitter, and have more fun along the way. Thank you so much for making time to share more about you and your perspectives and insights. Quite a joy, and we greatly appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, now I'm thinking maybe I should have said giddy up.
Oh,
No,
we can, yeah, that goes along.
that's right, that's right.
thank
Yeah.
you so much. You guys have been so fun, and loved all the questions.
Thank you, Michaeli. And listeners, we'll catch you on our next episode. We hope you enjoyed that conversation with Makaylee Jones. We sure had a blast chatting with the legend, Makaylee Jones. If you want to check out her coaching services, head over to giddyupmultisports.com and you can find that in the show notes as well. Stay tuned for next week's episode. Bob and I are doing a series on the Masters athlete. If you're not sure if that is you, master's athlete, well, technically, age 35 and older, welcome to the crowd, master's athlete. So in part one, next week, we're talking about some nutrition specifics surrounding the master's athlete. If you've got a sports nutrition question you'd like us to address on a future Ask Us Anything episode, drop us an email over to hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. Love to hear from you. And even if you have a guest idea or a topic idea, we like to hear what y'all are looking for on this podcast. We certainly do appreciate your support. If you have a second right now on your podcast platform, go to the ratings section, which is easy to do here on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and just hit the 5-star little rating thingy. And that does help us grow, continue to share content with other listeners like you around the world. For more info about the services and programs, testing, and so on that Bob and I offer, you can check out our respective websites. Bob is over at Energy Performance, ENRGPerformance.com, and myself, Dina, over at NutritionMechanic.com. Make sure to get on the newsletter as well. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the hosts and the guests involved and do not represent replacement for medical consultation with your doctor. The information and opinions provided here are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or medical condition. This podcast is for information, education, and entertainment purposes only.